What is meditation without practice or method? Can you look and see into the very nature of consciousness itself? What is the wonder of what we are, and can we discover it for ourselves? This is the Laboratory of Mind, podcast exploring that which is closest to us. Welcome to the Laboratory of Mind podcast. My name is Ari-Pekka Skarpe and I'm talking today with Richard Witherman, who is a long-time practitioner of meditation, teaching meditation, leading retreats in Springwater Center. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you, AP. I'm very glad to be here.
I'm very glad that we have this chance to have a dialogue today. I was introduced to Springwater Center, I think, 10 or 15 years ago, something like that, when I was reading about Tony Packer's approach to meditation. So, Richard, you have a long history in meditation and in Springwater Center. So could you share us a little bit about that history?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I became interested in meditation in my early 20s and found my way to the Rochester Zen Center, who was led by Philip Kaplow, in 1971. And I was a student of Roshi Kaplow for 10 years, living near the Zen Center for a couple of years and then moving out to New Mexico near Taos in the mountains. And so I first met Tony in 1976 when I was at a sesshin, and she was in training at that time to be a teacher, and she was actually being there in the Doksan room next to Philip Kaplow in an alcove, just observing what goes on between the teacher and their student. And I remember it vividly because her presence was very soft and easy and warm, and I didn't mind her being there at all. So I think that was the beginning of my connection with Tony. And I decided to become her student in the early 1980s. And soon after that time, within a year or two, she decided to leave the Rochester Zen Center and start her own center. She had read Krishnamurti and had gone to some of his presentations and really liked the very open style that he presented, and decided that she would like to follow her own path in working with Zen and meditation and the sense of inquiry in general. So in 1983, I went back to the Rochester area again because Tony and her staff had found a lovely piece of land south of Rochester, some 200 acres, with streams and forests and open meadows in the Finger Lakes area of New York. And so I participated in the building project, and that's when I really started to get to know Tony and the spirit of what became Springwater Center. And I was just thinking about that time that it was quite exciting. We were living in an old Quonset hut. This was an old farm from that went all the way back to the 1800s. And cooking meals there and being with each other, sitting on hay bales, and also starting to construct the center building. And that was kind of one of the neat things about Springwater, is that the design, the building of the center, was all done by voluntary work. There were probably 15 or so of us who were there that summer building, some of us learning the trade and some of us having some experience. And it was a lovely experience. And that's been part of Springwater Center's sort of tradition right from the beginning. People just were very enthused about it, and they gave a lot of time and energy to it. So I think that gives the basic background, and I'm thinking of some of my interactions with Tony at that time, just to kind of fill out my relationship with her and that kind of thing. Would that seem appropriate, AP?
Yeah, I think that would be very interesting.
Great. So as we started to meet and be with Tony, we were still had many of the trappings of the Zen tradition. We wore robes, and there were other formalities, but bit by bit she began to experiment. And after a while, instead of calling it Duk-san, we just called them meetings. And Tony was really working with the relationship between teacher and student, trying to open it up such that we were working with that territory of authority and really each of us discovering our own authority and yet having a very deep and lively exchange with the facilitator or the teacher who had spent their life doing this work. So that was that's been an ongoing process at Springwater Center since its beginning. So one of my fondest memories of Tony was a meeting, so we just started calling them meetings, that took place out under the trees near the Quonset hut, middle of the summer. And I was sharing with Tony some aspects of my life that I was wanting to look into. And one of Tony's innovations was that she says, well, rather than working on koans, what would it be like to make your life your koan, to really bring what's going on in your everyday life into your inquiry and into your dialogues with your teacher? So I was bringing up something in my personal life that I was wanting insight into, and I remember her standing up and putting her arms in the air. She had this lovely way of doing that, and her face just lit up, and she says, Richard, just wonder and become curious about everything. Question everything all the way down freshly and just see what's really going on. Look into your assumptions, look into your cultural assumptions, and just open it all up. And I think that moment embodies the affectionate connection I feel with Tony and really embodies the heart and soul of her work.
So I was wondering about this practice of meditation, or was there a practice? What would you say about this make your life koan? Is there a practice, or how would you describe this?
That's a good question. And when I said make your life a koan, I think it was overly dramatic. I don't think she ever said anything like that. She was more like just saying, bring that energy of curiosity that goes on in the wonderful koan tradition, where each one of those jewels brings forth an aspect of living, and and see that your everyday life is just like that. And bring that same sort of curiosity to moments of happiness and moments of difficulty in relationship and in your work life and your home life. So practice. So in terms of meditation itself, Springwater from the beginning welcomed whatever practice you were doing. But Tony then began to say, what would it be like just to be here? Just to sit and listen and be open. In terms of practice while meditating, as I said earlier, we were open to whatever practice you'd like to bring to Springwater Center, but Tony suggested a kind of open sense of being, just a quality. She loved to use the word listening. So a kind of open sense of relaxing and letting go and listening into this moment with all of the senses simply being alive and present to what is here. So there's a sense of the flow of being that is both going on, quote-unquote, internally, in terms of our sensations and feelings and emotions and thoughts, and also all of our senses, the light and sound and the whole presence of life living just as it lives. So I think it's fair to say that the practice was a sense of kind of discovering this quality of being, this open presence awareness, and then letting that be present in our everyday life. And sort of interwoven with this open listening is this quality of curiosity and wonder. And also Tony would often speak of a quality of not knowing. And how I responded to that through the years was to feel into a quality where the whole need to know, to figure out and understand that I was trained so deeply with in our school and my family and our culture, to let that rest, to not have to know, to let it be okay to not know. And in the freshness of not having to know, not put life into categories or systems, of understanding, it can come alive just the way that it is. And our curiosity and excitement about the living nature of each moment can come alive as well. Yeah, it's wonderful to remember just the way Tony would talk about that and how that it kind of gave permission. Even within a meditative practice where it's so easy to feel like you need to quiet down and you need to accomplish something, to just open up to the living nature of what is here. The whole spectrum, including whatever state of mind you might be in, whatever emotions are here. And in doing that, there's a discovering of the spaciousness of presence. It's another word Tony used a lot, calling it spacious awareness. And that's kind of an invitation into that open spaciousness that has room for everything.
I was thinking about this discovery of this open presence. How can one kind of help another person or perhaps even himself to do this discovery.
That's a wonderful question, and it's a lifetime open question for me. An ever-changing question, both for myself and for the people I work with and meet with. So I'm just waiting for a moment to see what comes now. And I think one reason it's such a big question is it's a little bit different for each of us. I think we have to find our way to perhaps the taste of this. So many things are coming through here to in different ways of putting this. One of the beautiful offerings of the meditative traditions is that it puts before us this amazing observation or amazing question. It invites us to look and see into the very nature of consciousness and awareness itself. The wonder of the two of us being here right now, listening and talking and communicating, and also the people who are joining us listening, all of you who are listening here together. And so we use this word awareness to point to this really it's a miracle of this connection and this openness and all the multiple layers of communication that are going on using the sound of our voice and what also feels like, even through the digital connection, a connection with UAP that's beyond describing. So all of this is in this realm of awareness, of what's pointed to as awareness. And so the meditative traditions say this wonder that's beyond any conception, beyond any system, is the wonder of what we are. And that what we think we are, this separated person based in thinking, is just a part of this larger awareness that includes all of life. And so the meditative traditions invite us to not just believe this and then let that become a philosophy, but to discover it for ourselves. And in all the different traditions, there's multiple practices that have evolved over the years through countless numbers of people who have gone through this experience themselves. And then, based on their own experience, they've offered these practices, which are all so helpful. And I think one of the gifts of Tony was to say, yes, use those practices, and then look beyond them to what they're pointing to. Don't think that it's the practice that is what's going to bring you to this, but let it serve you to give a taste, to open up, to remind you of what is already here and really what we already know. What's already going on. And yet somehow in this mystery of how we're put together and how thought and imagination works and identity, we just kind of lose track of this subtleness. And then we believe we have to do these heroic things to get back to it. But truly, in all my years of experience, it's more like relaxing into what is already here, relaxing into what is home. And it's kind of a matter of giving ourselves permission that that's okay. And then for myself, paying attention to those little clues, to the things that I hear a teacher say or that I read somewhere, or even just moments in everyday life that sort of resonate or ring a bell somewhere, and then having the sense that it's okay when that kind of signal comes alive in me to pause and again listen and wait and be. And then let it unfold of its own. Because the more I have an idea of what this is, and the more I try to do it, the more complicated it gets. Yeah. And then it becomes for me more like taking a breath. All right, relax. It's okay. So that, I think that just begins to open up touching your question.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this question that I asked when you were kind of expressing this, your approach to this, what is that, you know, the kind of a problem with recording this podcast that reveals to me now is that, you know, I feel this need to ask questions to know things, but then you are kind of pointing to this this curiosity and not knowing. So it's kind of, you know, the questions are not to be answered, but they are to kind of bring up the natural curiosity that we already have there. So I'm kind of a little bit like struggling with this this paradox here that, you know, what are we doing here when we are discussing, having this dialogue?
Yes, that's beautifully said, and it's so true, and it's the paradox of everyday life, isn't it, that we have to ask questions, and so the questions naturally frame things in a particular way. And yet, we can kind of be soft and easy with that, knowing language is limitation, and then let those questions not restrict us, but open things up, just like what you're suggesting, like not even knowing what we're doing here or what this podcast is. And then it opens it up for it to be a really lively unfolding of something that neither of us could have foreseen.
Is this the way that you were also working with Tony?
Yes, absolutely.
When you were talking about this, these old traditions, you mentioned you were 10 years following Philip Kaplow's teachings in Zen Buddhism. You know, we have this many other traditions also that have very long roots. Do you think that there is something that you have kind of kept from these traditions in this work also, or how do you see it?
Oh, absolutely. Every tradition is just wonderful. And I just, I have affection and I just honor the people through the centuries who have given their lives to this wonder and curiosity as it arose in each of them, and then discovered ways that were alive and that they shared with others, and then people would do this together. And like all traditions, these forms can become stale. And then within each of these traditions, there are cycles of the forms becoming stale and then being re-enlivened. So I think it's that beauty of being able to receive what each tradition has to offer, while also being mindful of how easy it is to believe that the authority of one particular way might be in our minds the only way, and then we try to figure out how to do it, or we feel somehow like we failed if we can't do it or it doesn't produce something. So in my own case, the tradition of Zen Buddhism, it's so rich. And just the very idea of our original nature and waking up to our original nature. And through the Rochester Zen Center, the emphasis was on awakening. And that's a delicate subject as well. It's so great that that's the emphasis, but then we can kind of get fixated on it and have an idea of what that is. And then we discover as things open up, and we discover the truth that Zen says that there's nothing to open up to and no one who can possibly open up to it. We just have a big laugh at all the things I tried to do that I thought were real. I remember one of the phrases Philip Kaplow said once was that about talking about life and ideas and beliefs all being dreams, and that Zen was one of the most beautiful dreams. I find in my heart there's such affection for Buddhism, and particularly the story of the Buddha finally coming to this place in his life where he just could not go on doing any of the things he was doing, including being a king or being a forest sadhu. And he just sat down under the tree and says, okay, I'm just going to stay here. I'm just going to look and see and be. And there's something about sunrise and the way the story is told of it all opening up and him touching his hand to the earth, that every time I heard the story retold in multiple ways, it's just such a beautiful story. Not of somebody who's superhuman, but a story of all of us. That each of us in our lives have that, have those moments, and have the potential for those moments.
Something you said earlier about this, that Tony told you that don't think it is the practice that takes you somewhere.
Yeah.
I have been struggling with these different practices myself also during many years, and I find myself often caught in this kind of situation where I I find myself doing some practice that I know that I have already fixed my mind about what it is about and what would be the results that would be the result of this practice, and at the same time kind of knowing that's not going to happen that way,
mm-hmm.
but still, you know, like you said about this, the Zen is the most beautiful dream. you kind of feel that you need to have something, something to, you know, get a grip on and, you know, just do it even though it wouldn't be, you know, a way for any of these results.
Yes. It's so interesting. It's part of a paradox, isn't it? Where there's the habit of our own conditioning and our trauma. I don't want to use the word conditioning because it can have a judgment to it. There's the miracle of which is part of being a human being, of this lively thought, word, imaging process that creates worlds, has this ability that in the flash of an eye to create a world that feels so real, a world we identify with and can live out, maybe even for years. And so there's this amazing quality that's part of our human life. And as we sort of look into this and get to know it and discover that, oh, yeah, these really are stories. This is not the whole universe and everything. This is a story that my culture dreamed up, a story that my family or myself have dreamed up or I am dreaming up. And not bad or good, but recognizing its power. And then also in recognizing it, turning the heart towards that within which this is taking place, the spaciousness of it. And that's one of the things about stories is they tend to be contracting. They tend to be kind of a black hole in which only the terms of this story seem to be real and nothing else exists. And one of the things through the years of meditation is starting to recognize that that's the property of thought and imagination and that it can do this. And so, in thinking about practice, practice is the way that we have of sort of having a moment of recognizing that we're sort of running on this treadmill or involved in these worlds. And, oh, okay, I can pause here. And my practice is the way I can pause. And whether it's doing something simple, following the breath, awareness, mindfulness of what is here. It's just wonderful to start doing that. And then there's that delicate point of kind of doing the practice and it having its own sort of logic to it and its own way. And then sort of that light touch of kind of letting it go. Knowing this too could develop into a world which is contracted. So those are the words that come to me. Does that resonate with you, AP, in terms of how you see practice and experience practice?
Yes, I think so, because in my life, in this practices that I have been doing, I see that it has been going so that in some point I'm in a point where I just need to let go of that practice. And I've also found out that I can't really choose the practices that I do, but it's almost the opposite, that it seems like some practice is kind of emerging or choosing me. Mm-hmm. But it will always develop somewhere, and then at some point, you know, you just let go of it. it turns out to something else. One of the most interesting things, I think, in this way of working has been this this kind of awareness of the awareness,
mm-hmm.
that might also emerge, and you know, that's something that I seem to go back again and again, you know, even after years of doing something else. And I have been also kind of researching it, what happens there. And I can't really say that it is a practice, because in order for it to be a practice, there should be some method and some way from point A to point B. But it doesn't seem to be like that at all. It's more kind of, you know, being aware. You can't really say it's a method or a practice.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that just happens.
Yes, I resonate with that very much. And the word that I use for that is inquiry. And there's the tradition of Ramana Maharshi and self-inquiry, with the self being the large S. And it's very much that way for me too. I think the heart and soul of my curiosity and wonder is in terms of awareness itself. And a number of ways just arise here, both ways that I've learned and heard of from others, just various simple words that people have spoken, and then sort of things that come here that turn my attention or keep my attention upon the utter miracle and wonder of awareness itself, and particularly the spaciousness of awareness. There's a phrase that I heard someone say of, in the middle of thinking or doing something, they simply said, become aware or notice the space within which this is occurring. Just notice the space. And something like that is just very wonderful. Oh yeah, the space. And I was getting kind of contracted into the tightness of the thought or the emotion or the bodily identification. And so it's not a matter of having to clean these up in any way. Just, oh yeah, this is all going on within space. And then getting curious about the space, and space and the relationship of space to awareness. Oh, the meditative traditions say that space itself is aware. Wow, what is that? This awareness that is here right now is not coming from something I am doing. This awareness and spaciousness are the same. So that's how the inquiry that you're pointing to kind of unfolds for me.
When I listen to you, I can't help but notice this importance of this curiousness. And this reminds me of my own experience also. there has been times in my life when I have kind of have this attitude of, you know, just forget about it. I don't do this meditative work anymore. You know, it's, you know, and I kind of stop doing this kind of like practices or sitting on a cushion or anything like that. But then in some situation, you just become aware of something. Perhaps it could be put in the words something similar that you said, this spaciousness or something like that. And then it kind of, you know, fires up the curiosity of what is this? And, you know, then you just have no choice but to, you know, you invest your time and your kind of your awareness of looking at that. What is this that is happening? And, you know, it's not even like a practice, but it's just something that, you know, gets your attention and keeps you going with it, because it is just so interesting that you can't just, you know, ignore it.
Exactly. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. But also when I was listening to you, how you were describing your work with Tony, I was thinking about this, how wonderful it is to have this very open, you know, way of approaching all this. And, you know, not to put it in very kind of a stiff categories and, you know, label everything with strict, you know, dogmas or something like that, that sometimes also happens. Because one thing that it does is then that the curiosity might go away, because you have these concepts. You kind of think that you already know, okay, it was this concept, you know. There's no need to search or research it anymore.
Yes, that's a powerful thing, isn't it? And in my terms, it's part of that, the wonder of thought that creates a world, and then, well, it's easy to get attached to that world. I'm looking for a better word than that. For a world to have meaning, because it gives us something we can hold on to. It's a reality that I can know and understand. And truly to wonder and be curious, those worlds just fall apart. And again, the message of Buddhism, that there is nothing that can be held on to. No, even the contractions that we find, we want to find something solid within, those too just ebb and flow, arise and dissolve. Yeah, so that's with a great observation that we don't need to do anything more because we know. And underlying that is the, I think for myself, is the fear that I really can't question this world because it might fall apart. Does that resonate?
Yes. Yeah. It was just another day. I was driving my car to somewhere, and for some reason I was thinking about these things, and the idea of just letting go of all these things that in my mind that seem to be so important, how this society is built. You have the certain job and your role in society in different places and all this, that to just let go of all those in your mind even. There was something scary in that. Because what then?
Absolutely. And I think scary is almost an understatement. It's really good to acknowledge that this is no small thing, to come to the threshold of letting go all of those anchors, those footholds. As you say, what then?
On the other hand, now in the beginning of this year, when there was this news coming about this war situation in Europe, that was something that was, I could not ignore here.
Yes.
Here living in Finland, and I was in the process of doing some yoga exercises there, and then when I was sitting and doing some meditative work there, I just noticed that in that situation, that was quite intense. It was the first couple of days of these developments in Europe. I noticed that my kind of a mind did not want to do any practices or methods, but it just kind of it almost felt like it clarified the awareness and just was in that awareness, but there was no anxiety or anything like that in there, but just
yes.
The presence, quite natural, very clear. There were no this kind of the kind of vain thoughts that are leading you there or there, things that don't really matter. And it was almost like this is what actually matters, and it is the being, the presence, the awareness. And in it, there is no kind of fear, for example.
Yes. Absolutely, beautifully said.
But it's not either a thing that you use some method to get there. you know, it's more like something that happens naturally.
Mm-hmm.
When you kind of allow it to happen.
Yes. And I have the feeling for myself and perhaps for you that the curiosity and interest in this wonder of being here, presence, makes a little space or allows the thinking and figuring and doing to relax enough so that the wholeness of what is here can be. Yeah. So as you said, it's not really a practice, and yet that interest in this direction I'm looking for the right words here, and none of them truly are appropriate. We're in such territory at the moment, it feels like, that words can't really touch it. They can only hint.
So this dialogue that we are now in, I'm wondering how important this way of kind of carefully discussing these things is in the culture of Springwater Center.
Oh, yes, very much. What comes to mind is that lovely word that Tony uses of listening. Listening with all our senses, our whole being. And the carefulness that you refer to as it seems to be taking place here with us is that quality of listening and waiting and sensing and kind of for myself waiting for the words to come forth that are sort of in touch or in tune. And if a idea or a category comes up that seems like it's gonna kind of add a whole bunch of stuff to it, there's a feeling of pausing with that.
Yes, and I can kind of feel how this also invites to pause and wait what is kind of naturally emerging.
Yes. Yeah, what I'm aware of is, as you said, that to pause and wait for what is naturally occurring. And I'm aware of this line of thoughts that has ideas about what should be occurring. And an impulse somewhere in my body to insert those to get that to happen. And I don't know, that's great to see that. How many times in our everyday life does that go on? And sometimes that life that gets inserted is is kind of odd. And so that what is unfolding naturally, moment by moment, all the interconnections of they're taking place in our bodies, in the land where we are, the nature around us, the people, our homes, all this lovely interactive dance that's occurring, naturally unfolding. And so this pausing is a way of honoring that. Yeah, that's not a bad way to say that. Letting it be and not trying to get it to fit into something. Even when what is unfolding is not easy or very difficult or even overwhelming, such as the war.
I kind of feel like when I'm observing what is happening now in my kind of mind, is that the one thing that I'm observing is this spaciousness that seems to occur here when you are trying to carefully listen what is happening here. And I'm not just listening to what is happening in my own feelings, thoughts, the body, and not even what is happening in this dialogue between you and me, but also about the audience that we don't really at this time even have here, you know.
Yes.
but we probably will have. So, you know, this is one interesting thing in this group dialogue that Springwater Center has a quite long tradition of. And we have been doing that also in a meditation group where I have been involved. How this the audience affects what is happening.
Yes, very much.
So I was thinking that could you tell a little bit about this group dialogue? I know you have written this nice text about it. Was it called The Spirit of Group Dialogue? This is kind of social form of meditation, you could say, or how would you put it?
Yes. Well, what comes to me is that what we are doing in this dialogue, the two of us, the quality of listening and spaciousness and wonder, and it's the same when we gather with more people. And it's a little more complicated because of all the myriads of interactions and things that go on between us and what comes up in us when somebody says something. And then how we're used to be in social situations with groups of people and perhaps some of our own unconscious fear. So it really is just like what we're doing, only it brings in so many other currents of experience. And then just discovering how we can listen to one another in a group. And sometimes a reaction happens or something takes place and it just fills up the group, and that's sort of what happens. And then maybe we pause and we find a way. And then that itself is interesting because we kind of see, oh yeah, those are some of my habits or my fears about how I relate to others. Those are some of my go-to places when I don't know what else to do. And so the neat thing about getting together in a social situation where we might feel required to fill up the space with thoughts and ideas, we can start to discover other possibilities.
So it kind of enriches the possibilities of our thoughts. Experiences.
Yes. In our everyday lives, it kind of gives that permission to pause. Perhaps in a conversation, either with one other person or a group, in which perhaps a button gets pushed and something's about to be said, and I kind of can recognize the familiarity of where that is going in me and where it might go in the conversation. And so, oh yeah, I can just take a breath and wait and see.
So this was one form of this meditative inquiry that Tony was developing, or how was this developed in the Springwater Center?
Like so many things at Springwater, it just happened one day. I can't even remember how far back. Either Tony was in conversation with someone, or it just came up, oh, okay, in retreats. And maybe during the week, let's have a set aside an hour for being together. And so then it began to be experimented with. I think also the roots are with, there's a well-known scientist who is associated with Krishnamurti. I'm not remembering his name right now.
David Bohm.
Yeah, David Bohm. And I know he had a way of doing dialogue with people that I think had a little more formality to it. I'm not that familiar with it. Perhaps that was one of the seed ideas from which it started.
Yeah, some years ago I read this, I think it was David Bohm's book on dialogue, and I think that there is more formality involved there, like you said. But perhaps the one idea there is to have a kind of a dialogue that doesn't have a structure where you, like you usually build up a dialogues that, you know, you have a start and then you have argumenting and different opinions and then you come to a conclusion, you know. This is the kind of a usual narrative, and I think that in this dialogue that David Bohm was writing about, that was inspired by his talks with Krishnamurti. It was kind of a more open approach.
How about you, AP? What have you discovered about dialogue in your meditation group?
That's a good question. Well, one thing that is kind of funny also is that, you know, in Finnish culture, people are not very talkative. You know, if you compare to, for example, people in US. and when you are in a meditative setting, this is kind of emphasized also, because people are more kind of turning towards, you know, inwards. So quite often the dialogues might be that, you know, somebody usually says something to the beginning and then, you know, people might be just silent. So that's one thing in Finnish culture. So, you know, in order to have the conversations or this dialogue ongoing, I think that there must be a little bit more of emphasis of at least some points to, you know, talk aloud something that is happening and not just observe silently. If I remember correctly, there was something, perhaps it was some book of Tony's, that there was this encouragement of, you know, hold a little bit before you say it aloud, you know, but in Finland it's the opposite. You you have to a little bit encourage people to, you know, say something aloud even if you are not sure if you want even. You know,
I really like that. Yes, it's so true, and that is in our American culture. We're just sort of taught to fill up the space with whatever, and so we have to rein that in, and we're kind of uncomfortable with there being periods of silence. So, yeah, I really like the difference. And as you were saying, what came was, so here we are in this open, quiet space with just this interest in awareness itself and the unfolding, the natural unfolding. And how amazing to be in a situation where you can not just silently experience that, but let that unfolding be acknowledged in words. And I think this is the real beauty of group dialogue, is that the words can come forth from me that hint at and touch the fullness of the experience. And the more we kind of trust the situation that we can do this and not have to frame it in a particular way, just let it come out. And then we listen into one another. And then another person can speak of their experience. At moments when that happens, and there's a lot of that flavor here as we're talking, it's a very beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And to actually discover that that can take place in a group of people is pretty amazing.
Yes. Yeah, this is something that I have also kind of discovered in this group dialogues, that sometimes when you kind of can just let go of your own expectations of what should happen, and you know, be in this process. It could be even described as some kind of a flow state in that group, even though, you know, there's not much happening, you know, when observed from the outside, but the very intense listening of all, also the silence, which is shared within this group of people. It can be very, very powerful, and sometimes the things that are shared are something that kind of you have insights, perhaps on your own life or more kind of general things. But also this very intense feel of sharing with other people something, your feelings or the experiences or something like that. And that can be also quite, you know, I would say even a healing experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much. I'm the impression just came to me of some of the more tribal cultures, and one of them in which they actually begin their day by sharing their dreams. And so what you're saying brings to mind that communal sense of connection with each other and the relaxing of the social expectations and carefulness we can have.
Mm.
To letting this flow state of being, this unfolding, be honored together. And the kind of connection we feel with each other in that is beautiful.
I'm mindful about the time that we have now spent in this dialogue.
Yes.
And I think that this is approaching to the end of podcast's length. But you know, I also feel that I would like to continue this quite long, but perhaps not within this format of podcast. So I was thinking, is there something that you would like to, you know, say or tell in the end of this dialogue, also for the audience of this podcast?
Yes, I too, AP, would love to continue this. As I think about what words might come forth, the title of one of Tony's books comes to mind, The Wonder of Presence. And presence being this lovely word for this alive listening connection. This open space of being that is so empty and open and yet so fertile and alive. And so full of wonder, curiosity. I guess just saying that even amidst our busy, compelling lives, we can pause, we can allow this deep, heartful curiosity in awareness and being itself to be here, even in the midst of doing things. So I love that we have gotten together and began talking, and then as we talked, what opened up was just the space of not knowing and a quality for me of just resting being here. Has this presence. Our very voices and communications coming from this spacious field.
Uh, In the beginning of this dialogue, I was saying that this I kind of struggle with this thing about the podcast that you know, I ask questions that would be kind of a questions that need to be answered, you know, to kind of follow the format of these kind of conversations that form something that we call a podcast.
Yes.
But in this process of having this dialogue with you and listening to what you were saying, I kind of noticed that I was able to let go of that that idea, and you know, just I think that we could not have kind of go as deep in some of the questions that I have in my notebook that I didn't ask, but they were kind of experienced here.
Yes. That's great.
So it has been really wonderful to have this dialogue with you, Rickard. I'm very happy that we were able to do this, and also that our network allowed also this after this initial disturbances that we had.
Yes, I feel the same way. I'm so glad that we stayed with it, and it all unfolded the way that it did.
Yes, I was wondering, would you like to point our audience to some of the works of Tony or some of the things in Springwater Center?
A couple of things come up. One is to you can go to the website and just look at some of the ways things are presented. There's different writings from Tony, and then each of the teachers have their own writings. Kind of get a flavor from that. And you know, I'm not inclined to suggest that people read a particular work. Maybe just go to Amazon, go and see which one of her works really touches you and open that up. Because how this work unfolds is so unique for each of us. I just continue to learn that day after day. And it's sort of the spirit in terms of supporting one another is that offering of resources that are alive for us to one another, but knowing that the very coloration and the very taste of what's alive for each of us is unique to us, and where they will pick that up and what they will do with it will be unique for each of us. So anything that I offer is in that spirit. Yeah, one of the things Tony often said was trust. Trust in your own experience. Trust in what is unfolding here. Even amidst all the traumas and delusions and difficulties and belief structures we have. To trust in, I'll use this word, the mystery of what each of us is. To listen into it. And when a curiosity arises, something that wants to be followed, to don't dismiss it because it doesn't fit a paradigm of an idea of what I should be doing. But follow it through and see what surprises might unfold with that. In the listening, in the spaciousness of awareness, that sort of dance of how we can kind of get lost in things, it all has a way of settling out. The things that aren't quite resonant, they reveal themselves. So we can trust this. And then we can trust our connection with others in this spirit as we help each other.
I think these are good words for finishing up this. So thank you very much, Rickard, for coming to talk with me in this podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, AP. It's my deepest pleasure. Thank you so much.
Tämä oli Mielen laboratorio. Jos kärsit meditaation tai mindfulness-harjoitusten haittavaikutuksista, tsekkaa rakentamani online-kurssi osoitteesta mielenlaboratorio.thinkific.com. Kurssilla on kattava tieto meditaation haittavaikutuksista sekä ohjeita yksilöllisten harjoituspolkujen rakentamiseen. Tutustu myös kirjoihini Mielen laboratorio ja Mindfulness, mielenselkeys ja myötätunto. Jälkimmäinen löytyy nyt myös äänikirjana kaikista suosituimmista äänikirjapalveluista. Jos pidit jaksosta, suosittele sitä myös ystävillesi, jotta hekin pääsevät tutustumaan oman mielensä sokkeloihin.